Ambangala Manuralari.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, you can change. 5. As Hiro approaches the street, he sees two young couples, probably using their parents' computers for a double date in the metaverse, climbing down out of Port Zero, which is the local port of entry and monorail stop. He is not seeing real people, of course. This is all a part of the moving illustration drawn by his computer according to specifications coming down the fiber optic cable. The people are pieces of software called avatars. They are the audio-visual bodies that people use to communicate with each other in the metaverse. Hiro's avatar is now on the street, too, and if the couples coming off the monorail look over in his direction, they can see him, just as he's seeing them. They could strike up a conversation, Hiro in the youth store in L.A., and the four teenagers probably on a couch in a suburb of Chicago, each with their own laptop. But they probably won't talk to each other any more than they would in reality. These are nice kids, and they don't want to talk to a solitary crossbreed with a slick custom avatar who's packing a couple of swords. Your avatar can look any way you want it to, up to the limitations of your equipment. If you're ugly, you can make your avatar beautiful. If you've just gotten out of bed, your avatar can still be wearing beautiful clothes and professionally applied makeup. You can look like a gorilla, or a dragon, or a giant talking penis in the metaverse. Spend 5 minutes walking down the street, and you will see all of these. Hiro's avatar just looks like Hiro, with the difference that no matter what Hiro is wearing in reality, his avatar always wears a black leather kimono. Most hacker types don't go in for garish avatars because they know that it takes a lot more sophistication to render a realistic human face than a talking penis. Kind of the way people who really know clothing can appreciate the fine details that separate a cheap gray wool suit from an expensive hand-tailored gray wool suit. You can't just materialize anywhere in the metaverse like Captain Kirk beaming down from on high. This would be confusing and irritating to the people around you. It would break the metaphor. Materializing out of nowhere, or vanishing back into reality, is considered to be a private function best done in the confines of your own house. Most avatars nowadays are anatomically correct, and naked as a babe when they are first created. So in any case, you have to make yourself decent before you emerge into the street. Unless you're something intrinsically indecent and you don't care. If you are some peon who does not own a house, for example, a person who is coming in from a public terminal, then you materialize in a port. There are 256 express ports on the street, evenly spaced around its circumference at intervals of 256 kilometers. Each of these intervals is further subdivided 256 times with local ports, spaced exactly 1 kilometer apart. Astute students of hacker semiotics will note the obsessive repetition of the number 256, which is 2 to the 8th power, and even that 8 looks pretty juicy, dripping with 2 to the 2nd additional 2s. The ports serve a function analogous to airports. This is where you drop into the metaverse from somewhere else. Once you have materialized in a port, you can walk down the street or hop on the monorail or whatever. The couples, coming off the monorail, can't afford to have custom avatars made and don't know how to write their own. They have to buy off-the-shelf avatars. One of the girls has a pretty nice one. It would be considered quite the fashion statement among the K-Tel set. Looks like she has bought the Avatar Construction Set, TM, and put together her own, customized model out of miscellaneous parts. It might even look something like its owner. Her date doesn't look half bad himself. The other girl is a Brandy. Her date is a Clint. Brandy and Clint are both popular off-the-shelf models. When white trash high school girls are going on a date in the metaverse, they invariably run down to the computer games section of the local Walmart and buy a copy of Brandy. The user can select 3 breast sizes: improbable, impossible, and ludicrous. Brandy has a limited repertoire of facial expressions: cute and pouty, cute and sultry, perky and interested, smiling and receptive, cute and spacey. Her eyelashes are 1/2 inch long, and the software is so cheap that they are rendered as solid ebony chips. When a brandy flutters her eyelashes, you can almost feel the breeze. Clint is just the male counterpart of Brandy. He is craggy and handsome and has an extremely limited range of facial expressions. Hero wonders, idly, how these two couples got together. They are clearly from disparate social classes. Perhaps older and younger siblings. But then they come down the escalator and disappear into the crowd and become part of the street, where there are enough Clints and Brandys to found the new ethnic group. The street is fairly busy. Most of the people here are Americans and Asians. It's early morning in Europe right now. Because of the preponderance of Americans, the crowd has a garish and surreal look about it. For the Asians, it's the middle of the day, and they are in their dark blue suits. For the Americans, it's party time, and they are looking like just about anything a computer can render. The moment Hero steps across the line separating his neighborhood from the street, colored shapes begin to swoop down on him from all directions, like buzzards on fresh roadkill. Animercials are not allowed in Hero's neighborhood, but almost anything is allowed in the street. A passing fighter plane bursts into flames, falls out of its trajectory, and zooms directly toward him at twice the speed of sound. It plows into the street, 50 feet in front of him, disintegrates and explodes, blooming into a tangled cloud of wreckage and flame that skids across the pavement toward him, growing to envelop him so that all he can see is turbulent flame, perfectly simulated and rendered. Then the display freezes, and a man materializes in front of Hero. He is a classic bearded, pale, skinny hacker, trying to beef himself up by wearing a bulky silk windbreaker blazoned with the logo of one of the big metaverse amusement parks. Hero knows the guy. They used to run into each other at trade conventions all the time. He's been trying to hire Hero for the last 2 months. "Hero, I can't understand why you're holding out on me. We're making bucks here. Kong bucks and yen, and we can be flexible on paying bennies. We're putting together a swords and sorcery thing, and we could use a hacker with your skills. Come on down and talk to me, okay?" Hero walks straight through the display and it vanishes. Amusement parks in the metaverse can be fantastic, offering a wide selection of interactive, three-dimensional movies. But in the end, there's still nothing more than video games. Hero's not so poor yet that he would go and write video games for this company. It's owned by the Nipponese, which is no big deal. But it's also managed by the Nipponese, which means that all the programmers have to wear white shirts and show up at 8 in the morning and sit in cubicles and go to meetings. When Hero learned how to do this way back 15 years ago, a hacker could sit down and write an entire piece of software by himself. Now, that's no longer possible. Software comes out of factories, and hackers are, to a greater or lesser extent, assembly line workers. Worse yet, they may become managers, who never get to write any code themselves. The prospect of becoming an assembly line worker gives Hero some incentive to go out and find some really good intel tonight. He tries to get himself psyched up, tries to break out of the lethargy of the long-term underemployed. This intel thing can be a great racket once you get yourself jacked into the grid. And with his connections, it shouldn't be any problem. He just has to get serious about it. Get serious. Get serious. But it's so hard to get serious about anything. He owes the mafia the cost of a new car. That's a good reason to get serious. He cuts straight across the street and under the monorail line, headed for a large, low-slung black building. It is extraordinarily somber for the street, like a parcel that someone forgot to develop. It's a squat black pyramid with the top cut off. It has one single door. Since this is all imaginary, there are no regulations dictating the number of emergency exits. There are no guards, no signs, nothing to bar people from going in, yet thousands of avatars mill around, peering inside, looking for a glimpse of something. These people can't pass through the door because they haven't been invited. Above the door is a matte black hemisphere about a meter in diameter, set into the front wall of the building. It is the closest thing the place has to decoration. Underneath it, in letters carved into the wall's black substance, is the name of the place, the Black Sun. So it's not an architectural masterpiece. When David and Hero and the other hackers wrote the Black Sun, they didn't have enough money to hire architects or designers, so they just went in for simple geometric shapes. The avatars milling around the entrance don't seem to care. If these avatars were real people in a real street, Hero wouldn't be able to reach the entrance. It's way too crowded. But the computer system that operates the street has better things to do than to monitor every single one of the millions of people there, trying to prevent them from running into each other. It doesn't bother trying to solve this incredibly difficult problem. On the street, avatars just walk right through each other. So when Hero cuts through the crowd headed for the entrance, he really is cutting through the crowd. When things get this jammed together, the computer simplifies things by drawing all of the avatars ghostly and translucent so you can see where you're going. Hero appears solid to himself, but everyone else looks like a ghost. He walks through the crowd as if it's a fog bank, clearly seeing the black sun in front of him. He steps over the property line and he's in the doorway. And in that instant, he becomes solid and visible to all the avatars milling outside. As one, they all begin screaming. Not that they have any idea who the hell he is. Hero is just a starving CIC stringer who lives in a used store by the airport. But in the entire world, there are only a couple of thousand people who can step over the line into the black sun. He turns and looks back at 10,000 shrieking groupies. Now that he's all by himself in the entryway, no longer immersed in a flood of avatars, he can see all of the people in the front row of the crowd with perfect clarity. They are all done up in their wildest and fanciest avatars, hoping that David, the Black Sun's owner and hacker-in-chief, will invite them inside. They flicker and merge together into an hysterical wall. Stunningly beautiful women, computer airbrushed and retouched at 72 frames a second, like Playboy pinups turned three-dimensional. These are would-be actresses hoping to be discovered. Wild-looking abstracts, tornadoes of gyrating light. Hackers who are hoping that David will notice their talent, invite them inside, give them a job. A liberal sprinkling of black-and-white people. Persons who are accessing the metaverse through cheap public terminals and who are rendered in jerky, grainy black-and-white. A lot of these are run-of-the-mill psycho fans, devoted to the fantasy of stabbing some particular actress to death. They can't even get close in reality, so they goggle into the metaverse to stalk their prey. There are would-be rock stars done up in laser light as though they just stepped off the concert stage, and the avatars of Nipponese businessmen, exquisitely rendered by their fancy equipment, but utterly reserved and boring in their suits. There's one black and white who stands out because he's taller than the rest. The street protocol states that your avatar can't be any taller than you are. This is to prevent people from walking around a mile high. Besides, if this guy's using a pay terminal, which he must be to judge from the image quality, it can't jazz up his avatar. It just shows him the way he is, except not as well. Talking to a black and white on the street is like talking to a person who has his face stuck in a Xerox machine, repeatedly pounding the copy button, while you stand by the output tray pulling the sheets out one at a time and looking at them. He has long hair, parted in the middle like a curtain to reveal a tattoo on his forehead. Given the shitty resolution, there's no way to see the tattoo clearly, but it appears to consist of words. He has a wispy Fu Manchu mustache. Hero realizes that the guy has noticed him and is staring back, looking him up and down, paying particular attention to the swords. A grin spreads across the black and white guy's face. It is a satisfied grin, a grin of recognition, the grin of a man who knows something Hero doesn't. The black and white guy has been standing with his arms folded across his chest, like a man who is bored, who's been waiting for something, and now his arms drop to his sides, swing loosely at the shoulders, like an athlete limbering up. He steps as close as he can and leans forward. He's so tall that the only thing behind him is empty black sky, torn with the glowing vapor trails of passing animercials. "Hey, Hero," the black and white guy says. You want to try some snow crash? A lot of people hang around in front of the Black Sun saying weird things. You ignore them. But this gets Hero's attention. Oddity the First. The guy knows Hero's name, but people have ways of getting that information. It's probably nothing. The second, this sounds like an offer from a drug pusher, which would be normal in front of a reality bar, but this is the metaverse, and you can't sell drugs in the metaverse because you can't get high by looking at something. The third, the name of the drug. Hero's never heard of a drug called Snow Crash before. That's not unusual. 1,000 new drugs get invented each year, and each of them sells under 6 brand names. But Snow Crash is computer lingo. It means a system crash, a bug, at such a fundamental level that it frags the part of the computer that controls the electron beam in the monitor, making it spray wildly across the screen, turning the perfect gridwork of pixels into a gyrating blizzard. Hero has seen it happen 1,000,000 times, but it's a very peculiar name for a drug. The thing that really gets Hero's attention is his confidence. He has an utterly calm, stolid presence. It's like talking to an asteroid, which would be okay if he were doing something that made the tiniest little bit of sense. Hero's trying to read some clues in the guy's face, but the closer he looks, the more his shitty black-and-white avatar seems to break up into jittering, hard-edged pixels. It's like putting his nose against the glass of a busted TV. It makes his teeth hurt. "Excuse me," Hero says. "What did you say?" "You want to try some Snow Crash?" He has a crisp accent that Hero can't quite place. His audio is as bad as his video. Hero can hear cars going past the guy in the background. He must be goggled in from a public terminal alongside some freeway. "I don't get this," Hero says. "What is Snow Crash?" "It's a drug, asshole," the guy says. "What do you think?" "Wait a minute. This is a new one on me," Hero says. "You honestly think I'm going to give you some money here? And then what do? Wait for you to mail me the stuff?" "I said try, not buy," the guy says. "You don't have to give me any money. Free sample. And you don't have to wait for no mail. You can have it now." He reaches into his pocket and pulls out a hypercard. It looks like a business card. The hypercard is an avatar of sorts. It is used in the metaverse to represent a chunk of data. It might be text, audio, video, a still image, or any other information that can be represented digitally. Think of a baseball card which carries a picture, some text, and some numerical data. A baseball hypercard could contain a highlight film of the player in action, shown in perfect, high-def television, a complete biography read by the player himself in stereo digital sound, and a complete statistical database along with specialized software to help you look up the numbers you want. A hypercard can carry a virtually infinite amount of information. For all Hero knows, this hypercard might contain all the books in the Library of Congress, or every episode of Hawaii Five-O that was ever filmed, or the complete recordings of Jimi Hendrix, or the 1950 census. Or, more likely, a wide variety of nasty computer viruses. If Hero reaches out and takes the hypercard, then the data it represents will be transferred from this guy's system into Hero's computer. Hero, naturally, wouldn't touch it under any circumstances, any more than you would take a free syringe from a stranger in Times Square and jab it into your neck. And it doesn't make sense, anyway. "That's a hypercard. I thought you said Snow Crash was a drug," Hero says, now totally nonplussed. "It is," the guy says. "Try it." "Does it fuck up your brain?" Hero says. "Or your computer?" "Both." "Neither. What's the difference?" Hero finally realizes that he has just wasted 60 seconds of his life having a meaningless conversation with a paranoid schizophrenic. He turns around and goes into the Black Sun.